I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, the race to the White House. With 45 days left until the election, Kamala Harris hits Georgia with a speech focused on abortion as Donald Trump attempts to court the Jewish vote. Civilian casualties as Hezbollah fires rockets and Israel conducts airstrikes. Hundreds of innocent people are caught in the crossfire. Political firestorm as candidates continue to spread debunked rumors about Haitians eating pets. Life is anything but normal in Springfield, Ohio. The impact on residents. And on the road again, we preview the Holy Father's upcoming trip to Belgium and Luxembourg. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, Vice President Kamala Harris makes abortion the main focus of her campaign today, just hours after discussing the same issue with Oprah. That former President Donald Trump makes headlines for telling a Jewish audience they could be responsible if he doesn't win the election. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, several things to get to tonight. First, the White House held a cabinet meeting today. Also, Vice President Harris joined virtually so she could hit the campaign trail. Donald Trump, meanwhile, heads to North Carolina for a rally this weekend. And in-person voting for this year's presidential election has begun, kicking off the six-week sprint to Election Day.
Vice President Kamala Harris leaves Washington, D.C. for a trip to Georgia. Today's campaign stop focused squarely on abortion.
Women who are also being made to feel as though they did something wrong. The judgment factor here is outrageous.
Harris also railed against pro-life laws Thursday night during an event with Oprah.
Certain people who are in these state houses, and then starting with the former president of the United States, think they're in a better position than a doctor or a nurse to determine when their patient needs medical care.
Pro-life groups continue to challenge Harris, saying she supports extreme late-term abortion and wants to make taxpayers cover the cost. Bishop Michael Burbage of Arlington calls on Catholics to renew their commitment to the legal protection of human life. Writing, may we witness, work, and vote so that all children in the womb will be protected in law and welcomed in love, and that all mothers and families will be strengthened by our support. Former President Donald Trump, meanwhile, speaking at the Israeli-American Council National Summit, telling supporters, this is the most important election in the history of the United States and the most important election in the history of Israel, but also warned,
if I don't win this election, and the Jewish people would really have a lot to do with that if that happens, because at 40%, that means 60% of the people are voting for the enemy. Israel, in my opinion, will cease to exist within 2 years, and I believe I'm 100% right.
Trump was the focus of a Secret Service press conference today. The agency's acting director blames communication gaps for not preventing the first assassination attempt.
We're at a pivotal moment in the history of the Secret Service. And at a pivotal moment in the history of our country. And I've directed that the Secret Service embark on a significant paradigm shift that will redefine how we conduct protective operations.
And before traveling to Delaware to meet with some key U.S. allies this weekend, President Joe Biden held a cabinet meeting. When asked whether it's realistic to get a ceasefire deal in the Middle East.
If I ever said it's not realistic, we might as well leave. A lot of things don't look realistic until we get them done. We have to keep at it.
Now, back to the election. Voters lined up today to cast their ballots in Minnesota, South Dakota, and Virginia, the states with the first early in-person voting opportunities. About a dozen more states will follow by mid-October. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, in the wake of the two assassination attempts on former President Donald Trump, the House overwhelmingly passed a bill which will increase Secret Service protection for major presidential and vice presidential candidates. The vote was 405-0. It comes as Republicans expressed concerns about the Secret Service's protection of former President Trump after the attempts on his life in Pennsylvania and Florida. Both sides of the aisle all agreed It was a needed measure. Meanwhile, outside the Capitol, members of the House Haiti Caucus were making a plea. They want an end to the false rumors fueling anti-Haitian sentiment in Springfield, Ohio.
Haiti has faced crises before, and that's true. However, nothing compares to the generational devastation that we are witnessing today. 45, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and the billionaires like Elon Musk disagree with our morality. They believe it's their responsibility to punish Haitian immigrants for daring to seek their own American dream.
It's a sad time when the former president and his running mate choose to pit one group of Americans against others.
Well, the mayor of Springfield, Ohio, is speaking out today about a possible visit from former President Trump.
If a presidential candidate was going to come and bring a message of coming together, trying to work through problems, talk about the real concerns that why we're in the middle of this debate, immigration concerns and immigration reform, that would be great. We would like to see those words from any presidential candidate that came to our town. And so my concern is what we've seen on the national stage. I really wouldn't want that repeated from our community.
All right, joining us now is Casey Rollins, Executive Director and Board Vice President of St. Vincent de Paul in Springfield, Ohio. Casey, thank you so much for being with us today. I know that you've been a part of the Springfield community for quite some time now, helping people in need and suffering in some way. Tell us about some of the services that you offer to your neighbors.
Hello, and thanks for having me. And sadly, for the reason, I must admit, but I'm still glad to be here. I've been with St. Vincent de Paul for just under 25 years, and as a volunteer. And we do all kinds of ministry that's based on, you know, scriptural teaching, love of God, love of neighbor, and whatever must be done, we must do it. And so we have always done that, and it usually involves things like food, clothing, shelter, you know, other forms of advocacy. You know, there's just any number of things that we'll take care of, utilities and those things. So we have sort of expanded that ministry just to accommodate whatever needs arise as they arise, which is where we are today.
Yeah, and you serve, you know, many of your new neighbors, of course, Haitian migrants who moved to your city over the past few years. Talk to us about the ways that you've been helping them and maybe some of the challenges, too.
Well, we started seeing visitors of new neighbors in about 2017. And, you know, our ministry, which aligns with the Catholic Church and it aligns with just the seven themes of Catholic social teaching. And the two key pieces of that are that we always welcome the stranger and we always care for the dignity of every person. And that said, you know, there are all kinds of extreme needs in the world. And in this particular case, we were, you know, seeing people that needed, they needed welcome when they got here. They were already here, right? So they came to us because there is a St. Vincent de Paul somewhere in Haiti, not exactly sure where. So they knew, you know, they belonged here in some way. So we tried to do needs assessments and whatnot. We did a lot of case management just to see where we were and where, you know, whatnot. And we found that the key piece that the Haitian community wanted advocacy and help with and real practical core help was that they needed, because their embodiment is about work. They just want to work and make a difference in society and also always, always, always taking care of their family. So we said, all right, we've got to focus on work permits. None of us are lawyers. So we connected to lawyers all over Springfield, Ohio, which were awesome. They were wonderful. And then we started doing legal clinics with a nonprofit advocacy group called ABLE, Advocates for Basic Legal Equity. And so day after day, young folks are coming in here, all ages too, but asking us to help them, first of all, interpret if they can't speak the language yet. We connect them to our computers, and we have interpreters and navigators right there beside them who are helping them apply for whatever necessary paperwork they need to maintain their currently legal status that involves now going to get that work permit.
Well, Casey, you're doing wonderful work, I know, there in Ohio. We're basically out of time here, but I just quickly want to ask you what you think about everything that's been going on, these rumors about the Haitians. How has that been impacting your community, really quickly?
Very painful, very sad. It's just heart-rending to see the loss and the sadness of our people here. But what is also key to this is the outpouring of love and support that we are seeing from all over the world. People are just stepping up and stepping out and saying, we have to be part of this. This has to stop. And so it's unbelievable to me the support we're now seeing, and we're making sure that our friends know that.
That's wonderful, Casey. Thank you so much, and God bless you for what you do.
Thanks. Take care.
All right, now to the Middle East, where the Israeli army says an airstrike on Beirut has killed a senior Hezbollah official, along with several others, in what is the deadliest attack on Lebanon's capital in years. Lebanese health officials say more than 60 were injured in the strike on the crowded neighborhood, with several in critical condition. Hezbollah has not confirmed the death of Ibrahim Akil, despite the Israeli military asserting that he was killed. This comes as Hezbollah launched 140 rockets at Israel following the apparent exploding pager attack earlier this week. Joining us now from Beirut is Margarita Kalassi, a journalist with EWTN affiliate Asimina. Margarita, good to be with you today. So tell us, what is the situation in Lebanon right now, and how are people there feeling after the stream of attacks this week?
Hello, Tracy. Thank you for having me. In Lebanon right now, a state of fear is dominating. People are lost. They cannot bear the brunt of these events anymore, especially after 5 long years of a harsh economic crisis and in light of a political deadlock in the country.
Margarita, what more do we know about today's targeted attack on Hezbollah militants in southern Beirut, including on the commander Ibrahim Akil?
Actually, an Israeli raid targeted a building in the southern suburb of Beirut earlier today. Red Cross vehicles crowded the roads leading to nearby hospitals because there were a lot of victims. Hezbollah high-ranking official Commander Ibrahim Akil was killed during this operation. The process of clearing the rubble of targeted buildings is still ongoing. And yesterday, Israeli warplanes broke the sound barrier over Beirut and its suburbs. Flares were launched during the speech of Hezbollah chief Hassan Nasrallah, warning Israel of a deadly explosion involving walkie-talkies and pagers devices.
Margarita, how are people feeling there? Are they expecting things to get worse there? And if so, are they preparing for the worst?
Yeah, exactly. This is the feeling in Lebanon. We are in a very, very precarious situation. After both warring parties affirm that no diplomatic solution is possible, Lebanese people are afraid as the specter of a potential war looms. Some have fled to remote areas in the countryside. Others are overstocking products from supermarkets and drugstores, expecting the worst.
And before I let you go, let's talk about the Christian population there in Lebanon, which has one of the largest in the Middle East. How are they reacting to this situation?
On one hand, Christians in the southern border of Lebanon have already been displaced to other areas in Beirut and farther since the beginning of those events. Yet some of them decided to stay in their homeland and caught between a rock and a hard place. Their choices are now limited in the event of a broader war. On the other hand, Christian leaders, political figures, and people don't want to experience all over again the war that erupted before. The majority of Christian parliamentary blocs support this stance too.
Margarita Kalassi with Asimina, thank you so much for your reporting. We appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you for having me. God bless you, too.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including help is on the way. A glimmer of hope for the Central European countries dealing with deadly flooding. Welcome back. The European Union says that it will give billions of dollars to the countries affected by massive flooding that has killed at least 24 people. After meeting with the heads of government, EU chief Ursula von der Leyen said these are extraordinary times, and extraordinary times need extraordinary measures. The funds will be quickly available for infrastructure repair. The flooding primarily has hit the Czech Republic, shown right here, along with Poland, Austria, Slovakia, and Hungary. Some of the EU funds are coming from an account kept for the most urgent of needs. All right, back to the 2024 election. North Carolina is one of the crucial battleground states that will determine the race for the White House. A little further down the ballot, a controversy there is brewing over the race for governor. According to a CNN report, Republican Mark Robinson, who is seeking to become the state's first black governor, left racial and sexual comments on an online message board more than a decade ago. The Republican denies the claim. Several recent polls have him trailing Democrat Josh Stein, the state's attorney general. And for more and for analysis, we turn to Mene Ukaburua, member of the editorial board at The Wall Street Journal. Mene, always great to have you on the show. A lot to discuss here, but I want to start with your reaction to the story out of North Carolina. And do you think it could in any way impact the presidential race?
Well, first of all, the story is extremely lurid in its detail and a huge impact on the race that has only a little over a month to go. Of course, CNN put together this collection of allegations that Mark Robinson was found posting on a pornographic site. He called himself a Nazi. He referred to different types of very lewd pornography that he enjoyed consuming and many other outrageous things. He was already trailing Josh Stein, the Democrat, by about 8 points, and this is very likely to sink his chances of being able to win the election there. But I think you're right to suggest that it could also have an impact on the presidential election, too. It's a very tight race there. An Emerson poll just came out that had Kamala Harris leading Donald Trump by about 1 point in North Carolina. And Democrats are going to be capitalizing on the Mark Robinson scandal to say, this is the candidate who Trump endorsed. This is what the GOP is today. And they're going to try to see if they can sink Trump's chances of winning in that state as well.
Mene, tell us why North Carolina, why it's so important in the presidential race, and also which way normally does the Tar Heel state lean?
Sure. Well, North Carolina has teetered between being a red state and a swing state over the past few election cycles. Barack Obama was able to win it in 2008, but that's the last time a Democrat was able to pull that off. But they've been very close in recent elections, and so they always feel as if they're in striking distance. And Kamala Harris has increased on where Joe Biden was polling in North Carolina, potentially because it has a very large black population, and she has strong support, as you might imagine, from black voters. And so they really think that if they can put that state in play, then that will mean that she won't have as much pressure to compete in the other few swing states where they have drawn up most of the campaign dollars and most of the attention in the election so far.
Mene, before I let you go, what other stories are you following right now?
Sure. Yeah, the polls in general after the debate recently between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris show that she has gotten a little bit of a bump out of her performance against Donald Trump on that stage. It's still very close in all the swing states, but it seems like she has a lot of momentum right now. And so the Trump campaign really is scrambling to try to see if they're going to be able to continue to compete in the crucial swing states.
Mene, thank you so much. Always great to get your input. We really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Tracy.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, frequent flyer miles, a preview of the Holy Father's upcoming trip to two traditionally Catholic countries. I'm just back from his 12-day trip to Southeast Asia, Pope Francis is preparing to hit the road again. Next week, the Holy Father is set to make his first papal visit to Luxembourg and Belgium. The 4-day trip to the traditionally Catholic countries comes just 2 weeks after he wrapped up the longest journey of his pontificate, this time just 1 day after returning from Luxembourg and Belgium. The 87-year-old will help oversee the start of the Synod on Synodality in Rome. Joining us now from Rome is Frank Rocca, senior Vatican analyst for EWTN News. Frank, always good to be with you. As we know, Pope Francis will be spending most of his time during next week's trip in Belgium. Tell us, what is the state of the church there?
Well, Belgium is a historically Catholic country, but as in many countries in Western Europe, that's been changing rapidly in the recent decades. In 2012, 58% of people in Belgium identified as Catholic, according to the Bishops' Conference. By 2022, 10 years later, only 50% did. And of those 50%, only 8.9% went to Mass even once a month. So it's definitely becoming part of the post-Christian secular West that Pope Benedict XVI was particularly concerned about in his pontificate.
Yeah, and euthanasia really has become a major issue in Belgium culture. Tell us more about that, and also, how's the church responding?
Well, yes, Belgium has definitely been in the vanguard of the move toward legalizing euthanasia. It was the second country in the world after the neighboring Netherlands to legalize euthanasia in 2002. And in 2014, it legalized it for minors with no minimum age. And it's been growing. Last year, there were more than 3,400 cases reported, and that was a spike. That was a rise of 15% over the previous year. So it's definitely becoming more popular. As for the church, well, the Belgian bishops have opposed euthanasia collectively, repeatedly, but it's more of a mixed bag with other Catholic institutions. Catholic hospitals and nursing homes often practice euthanasia. In 2017, a chain of Catholic psychiatric hospitals said they would euthanize psychiatric patients who didn't have a terminal illness, and the Vatican subsequently said that it had to stop identifying itself as Catholic. And earlier this year, the head of one of Belgium's largest insurance companies, an institution with Catholic roots, said that the rules ought to be relaxed and allow people, even without serious illnesses, who reach a certain age and decide their life is over. And he said this was called for because of the cost of supporting elderly people is getting to be too high, and so this has to be part of the remedy. So those are some voices. And as I said, the Bishops' Conference, while wanting to accompany people who choose euthanasia spiritually, also stresses that they can't show any kind of approval. But even there's some controversy. Bishop Johan Boni of Antwerp, who's a leading progressive, well-known outside of Belgium as well, said last year in an interview that he disagreed with the Vatican that the euthanasia is intrinsically evil. He said it really it depends, and that there's a difference between a 40-year-old and a 90-year-old with an incurable disease, and we have to be able to distinguish in these cases. So there's definitely some controversy there, even within the church, and it's a big topic.
Yeah, indeed it is. Can we expect Pope Francis to express his concerns about it?
Well, the Pope, it's hard to tell always of the Pope. It's certainly something that a lot of people will be expecting him to touch on or allude to or refer to in some way. But often he does so when he's visiting a country. Sometimes he doesn't address these things head on. He sort of hints at them and then lets the press and commentators tease it out. Maybe he'll get a question on the press conference flying back. So we'll see. In some way or another, it probably will come up or at least be alluded to.
Frank, do we know the other issues that the Holy Father may raise while in Belgium?
Well, it's interesting. He's not going to the European institutions, but still, he may, since he's there, he may talk about Europe, and it's a topic. Early in his pontificate, he visited the European Parliament, and he talked about aging Europe and the importance of revitalizing itself and its role in the world. And again, he may also touch on the secularism. Again, Western European secularism has not been a major focus of Pope Francis's pontificate as it was for his predecessor. But still, given where he's going, he may bring it up and address it in his way.
Yeah, Frank, I also want to ask you about this. Jean-Claude Ulrich, we know, is the head of the church in Luxembourg and a close advisor to Pope Francis. How significant is his role now in this pontificate?
Well, Well, he's a member of the Council of Cardinals, and he's playing a key role in the Synod, which will be unfolding next month, right after the Pope gets back. So, yes, he's certainly a big player and generally seen as a progressive figure, but an important advisor and, of course, a fellow Jesuit. So, and the Pope, as we know, has elevated a number of fellow Jesuits to high positions in this pontificate. And so we can assume that the Cardinal is a big influence, yes.
Frank Rocha, senior Vatican analyst for EWTN News. Thank you so much. I always appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you.
Finally, tonight, a 42-year-old man went out for a hike and ended up understanding the real meaning of life. Take a look at this right here. It's some shocking video where you can see the hiker in eastern China slipping and falling down rapidly into a steep mountain to be stopped and saved by a tree. In a later video, he reported that he had not been badly injured and reflected on how short life is and how he is looking forward to keep exploring the world. We're glad he's safe, and we're going to pray for him, that is, on his future adventures. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.